The Long Way Home is produced by the Cycling Independent with the support of subscribers like you and additional underwriting from Shimano North America. We are community-focused, community-supported, and dedicated to the whole of cycling. At the Cycling Independent, we say, if you ride bikes, you're one of us. In the mid-2000s, I suffered what was to that point in time the deepest bout of depression I'd ever experienced. To say I was despondent is like saying King Kong is a big ape. I was too broke to afford counseling, and in my state, I was struggling to connect with anyone. What got me through was my bike. Once I found myself on the other side, I realized that what really kept me engaged and feeling wonder were the canyon roads in the Santa Monica Mountains above Malibu. Dropping down those roads did something for me, something significant enough to make me start asking questions. That began the quest that ultimately led me to a book called West of Jesus, in which I learned about the neuroscience of flow states. Welcome to the Cycling Independence Podcast, The Long Way Home. I'm your host, Patrick Brady. Each week in The Long Way Home, we will bring you stories about cyclists and cycling, stories that speak to how cycling informs our sense of the world, making our lives more livable. It was Stephen Kotler's West of Jesus, a book ostensibly about surfing, that gave me an education in neuroscience and unlocked the mystery of a drive within me that I'd identified but couldn't name. I saw how it applied to cycling, and in June of 2016, published a feature in Bicycling Magazine that broke down flow for cyclists and also explained why group rides go too hard for recovery, but not hard enough to make riders stronger. And now, the science of Hui. As I plunged toward the turn, I saw a family of four on the edge of the road preparing to cross as they continued their hike high in the French Alps. The mother put out her arms to stop the others from stepping onto the pavement. The son grinned in awe. The daughter's face was an exclamation point, as though shocked to see a cyclist this far up on the mountain going so fast. When I thought back on the scene later that day, I couldn't comprehend how I'd recorded so much information. I was descending the Cime de la Binette, which tilts at a dramatic pitch, at times 15%, and gives France the distinction of claiming the highest paved road in Europe. It tops out at 9,193 feet of elevation, roughly a quarter of the descent to the town of Josier is above treeline. Without anything to obscure my view, I could sometimes see a full kilometer of unoccupied tarmac ahead. Being able to see when there were no cars approaching meant I could use the whole of the road from edge to edge and, for the first time in my life, take a descent like a Tour de France pro. I shot by sand-colored boulders, ponds of azure snowmelt, and over kilometer after kilometer of blacktop. In turns, I countersteered with force and felt the pull of gravity against my body, the way I did as a kid on amusement park rides. I was moving at a speed that demanded I completely focus on the road, yet I felt an odd mix of calm and excitement. Each turn seemed obvious, my line dictated by forces beyond my comprehension. I knew exactly what to do, despite never having ridden such a technical descent so fast. An hour later, I met up with my companions at the bottom. Despite screaming pain in my shoulder from having to maintain a nose-to-stem tuck for so long, I was euphoric. I didn't have a name for it at the time, but I had just experienced a phenomenon called flow state. The words euphoria and flow probably don't come to mind when you think about a race like the Dirty Kanza 200. With 200 miles of dirt and gravel, and only spare stretches of pavement holding the route together like tape, Kanza asks participants to go deep. And in 2015, that's exactly what endurance mountain bike racer Yuri Hauswald did. 10, 15 miles would pass without me really noticing, says the 45-year-old Hauswald. Time just turned off. Fellow participants who saw him said he had a look of intense determination. He stopped feeling pain, saying he hurt more in the first 70 miles than in the final 130. With only 3 miles to go, he started to see another figure on the horizon. It was race leader Michael Sensenbaugh. With 2 miles to go, Hauswald caught him. There was a slight rise, he says. I decided to open it up there, but he brought me back. I was thinking I probably spent my last match, but I focused on my breathing and recovery. As they approached the finishing chute, Hauswald's field of vision was reduced to little more than the brick buildings lining the street. The barriers seemed to grow taller. In the flat light of early evening, he had been on the bike 13 hours. He picked out the cones that marked the beginning of the chute. My brain turned off, and I was running on pure instinct. I didn't go, "Should I?" It just happened. That's when I laid down 900 odd watts. Sensenbaugh was on my left as we entered the chute. I never deviated from my line, and he may have tried to come back around me, but at the end of 200 miles, it came down to half a bike length. When I finished, it was complete shutdown. I let out a freaking Lord of the Flies primal scream. I don't recall any sound until I collapsed on my bar. I heard Dave Toll announcing my name and my wife saying, "You won, honey. You won." I was driven on pure instinct. There's no more thinking at that point. As different as my exhilarating descent down the Bennett was from Hauswald's Dirty Kanza ride, the two share key characteristics: a sense of superhuman athleticism, personal bests broken, time speeding up or slowing down, painlessness, instinctive judgment, and a euphoria that rises from depths we rarely access. You may be familiar with it. You become completely present and intensely focused. You lose your sense of self, becoming one with the bike, trail, or road. You possess control or mastery over the situation, feeling like, "I got this." Time may seem to speed up, as with Hauswald's recollection of miles going by quickly, or slow down, as I observed on the Bennett. You experience the activity as inherently rewarding, shorthand for, "That's so much fun, I'd quit my job and do it all the time." The feeling is usually brief, sometimes lasting only seconds, but occasionally it can last for minutes, even hours. It is known by many names: being in the zone, zen mind, runner's high, are a few. But it's most properly called flow state, a term coined in 1990 by researcher Mihai Csikszentmihalyi, PhD, a professor of psychology at Claremont Graduate University in Claremont, California. In a flow state, psychological and physiological conditions line up for us to achieve peak performance and, in Csikszentmihalyi's words, optimal experience. For a cyclist, flow can make a ride unforgettable instead of merely great. And if you understand why it works, you just might be able to achieve it more often. In his book, Flow, The Psychology of Optimal Experience, Csikszentmihalyi explains that flow doesn't happen unless you have the optimal ratio of challenge to skill. When the two are matched, say, on a descent that's challenging but not terrifying, your nervous system is confronted with slightly more stimuli than you can attend to consciously. The brain's prefrontal cortex, the part of your frontal lobe that is responsible for cognitive skills like judgment, planning, decision-making, and problem-solving, shuts down. You trade conscious processing for subconscious processing, says Stephen Kotler, founder and director of research for the Flow Genome Project and the author of The Rise of Superman, Decoding the Science of Ultimate Human Performance. In other words, you're processing so much information that you don't have time to think, creating a sense of total absorption. You stop wondering whether you'll get hurt if you screw up and take the wrong line, or how silly you look making that face. You quit the self-editing that happens when the prefrontal cortex is running the show and become completely in the moment. This part of the brain is also responsible for personality. Without a forebrain telling you where you end and the rest of the world begins, your sense of self gets fuzzy. Flow junkies talk about becoming one with the universe. Archers will become one with their target, and riders will become one with their bike. In this altered state of consciousness, you're able to perform your best. Chris Burka, MS, a neuroscience researcher and founder of Advanced Brain Monitoring, a developer of medical-grade devices that measure brain activity, has seen evidence of this on brain scans of expert marksmen, archers, and golfers experiencing flow. The parts of the brain associated with creativity light up, and all attention is focused on the target, says Burka. All the while, the athletes are calm and relaxed, as shown by a decrease in their heart rate. There's also a powerful neurochemistry underpinning whee! Kotler has spent more than a decade consolidating research about the neuroscience of flow states. What he found is that the body releases a potent combination of neurotransmitters that enhance performance during flow. When you tell your friend at the bottom of a sweet descent, "Dude, it was like time slowed down," it's because your body was producing norepinephrine, a stimulant that kicks the brain into overdrive. This allows you to process much more information on a subconscious level, leading you to perceive an elongation of time. The body also releases dopamine. It's what floods your brain when you get a kiss from your sweetie or win the town line sprint, making you feel amazing so that you want to go out and do the thing that triggers it again. It also tightens your focus and speeds up muscle reaction times. Hoswald's 900 watts? That was the endorphins at work. Endorphins are natural painkillers, neurochemicals that allow you to push through discomfort and discover reserves normally inaccessible. During flow state, your body also produces a neurotransmitter that enhances creative thinking and the ability to find novel solutions to problems. It's called anandamide, from the Sanskrit for bliss. And it promotes nonlinear thinking, the type of inspiration that drives jaw-dropping stunts at events like the Red Bull Rampage, or enables average people like me to see new lines on techie descents like the Bonnet. Anandamide's chemical twin, which attaches to the same receptors in the brain, is tetrahydrocannabinol, or THC, the component in marijuana that makes you feel high. As flow state wanes, your body gives you a final little fist bump to confirm what a great experience you've just had. It puts serotonin sprinkles on top of the sundae. Serotonin makes the world amazing. It's one of the powerful neurotransmitters responsible for happiness, and it leaves you with that post-flow afterglow. This cocktail of neurotransmitters released in flow state is better than any prescription antidepressant, says Leslie Sherlin, PhD, a neuroscientist and co-founder of Sense Labs, a San Francisco provider of brain training research and programs. If we think about all the different things we could put into antidepressants, he says, this combination would be it. Sherlin says this makes flow state autotelic, meaning that it makes us feel so good that we chase it without any outside motivation. According to Csikszentmihalyi, after your flow state ends, you peel off from the training ride, you finish the descent, your brain does a debriefing, transforming that previously challenging experience into your own personal new normal. The turn that was once so terrifying? It ain't no big thing. Flow stokes progression. And since the primary demand for flow to occur is a balance of challenge versus ability, not only does your skill set improve after each flow experience, but you also continue to chase ever-increasing challenges. The theory of flow state suggests that extreme sports athletes like Tony Hawk, Brandon Semenuk, and Danny McCaskill, who typically are described by the media as adrenaline junkies, are more accurately flow junkies. The fix they're looking for is not adrenaline, but actually that cocktail of norepinephrine, dopamine, endorphins, anandamide, and serotonin. In fact, too much adrenaline is counterproductive. It causes anxiety, says Sherlin. As we near flow, the adrenal system starts pumping, raising levels of stress hormones like cortisol. We are on high alert, but if we work ourselves up too much, we overwhelm our senses, he says. Adrenaline fills the receptors so that the body can't absorb these other neurochemicals like dopamine and anandamide. Once you get a big shot of adrenaline, you go from, I got this, to, I need to get out of this. This is why it's important for a situation to be challenging, but not too challenging. Why is flow state even a thing? The reason goes back to our predator days. Our love of aerobic exercise is rooted in our ancestry, says David Reichlin, PhD, Associate Professor of Anthropology at the University of Arizona, where he primarily studies the evolution of physical activity. There is good evidence that our evolutionary history included high levels of aerobic exercise and that this is associated with the rewards that occur during it. Reichlin's research draws a link between heart rate and the release of endorphins and neurotransmitters like anandamide. It is most profound when we exercise in the range of 60 to 80% of our maximum heart rate. Going all out in a sprint won't produce these results, nor will taking a leisurely spin around the block. That high, says Reichlin, is most likely to happen when we are engaged in what's commonly called moderate exercise. The effort level is also referred to as tempo, or zone 3. It's where many cyclists are probably happiest spinning along, much to the chagrin of most cycling coaches. It's too hard for recovery, yet not hard enough to result in significant fitness gains. But from an evolutionary standpoint, it makes perfect sense. Back when we were hunter-gatherers, those who could run longer ate better. and were more likely to pass their genes to future generations. Flow was how our bodies rewarded us for pursuing prey for hours, making us love the journey. We'd get little sips of dopamine to make us enjoy the run, anandamide to keep us sharp to opportunity, norepinephrine to keep us processing all the input at a superhuman rate, and endorphins to let us run through fatigue. And when we brought the beast down, we'd get a massive dump of serotonin to tell us, you did good. This is also why rides often default into this demilitarized zone of training. For many of us, the greatest priority on a ride isn't our fitness, it's our sanity. Like those early hunter-gatherers, the pack is our community, working together to track our next meal, running it down. And when we hit that town line sprint, led out by our friends or foes, that victory harkens back to thousands of years to the thrill we felt when we captured our quarry. The Lord of the Flies scream Oswald let out at the finish of Dirty Kanza, honey, we eaten good tonight. There is no roadmap to reaching flow state, but the work of Csikszentmihalyi, Kotler, and other flow state practitioners does leave some breadcrumbs to follow. As mentioned earlier, the key issue in flow is matching your skill set to the challenge, which floods the system with slightly more input than you can attend to consciously. If you're over-processing, you have anxiety, says Sherlin. If you only have a couple of inputs, you can attend to them. But when you cross this threshold from demand of input, you hit a nice sweet spot where flow occurs. Closely related, a central quality necessary for flow is novelty. When you do something so well memorized that it feels familiar to the point of being easy, it kills flow. You need an onslaught of stimuli to cause the prefrontal cortex to go offline. That's part of the reason downhill mountain biking is a great generator of flow, says Kotler. Moving in three dimensions is more novel than moving in two. There are high speeds, sudden changes in elevation and direction, and more technical obstacles than the more two-dimensional nature of riding on a flat, paved road. To achieve flow, you must also meet two other conditions, according to Csikszentmihalyi. You need a clearly defined set of goals and rules to give you a sense of progress and structure, like the finish line of a race or the bottom of a long mountain descent. You also must have clear and immediate feedback so that you can tell if you're meeting the challenge, which results in that crucial dollop of serotonin. Flow rewards good work, but you have to know your work is good. Most cyclists are flow fanatics to some degree. Every time we do a mountain bike ride and think, I'm going to rail that berm just a little faster this time, or salivate at the prospect of a long and technical descent on the road with other riders, it's because we're chasing that high. And repeated experiences with flow beget fulfillment unlike any other. Reichlin thinks riders are spot on when they joke that riding is their therapy. Aerobic exercise is one of the best ways to bring people happiness, he says. It's why I couldn't wipe the smile off my face at the bottom of the Bennett, or why the first time I got to the bottom of Santa Cruz's famed Emma McCrary Trail, I was so incapacitated by the awesomeness that all I could say to my buddy was, "Oh my God." I couldn't help it. We are evolutionarily wired to be rad. Sidebar. Unlock the ultimate ride stoke. 5 ways to tap into this powerful state of mind on the bike. Be in the right zone. A moderate tempo pace is most conducive to flow. That's about 6 to 8 on a 1 to 10 scale of rate of perceived exertion. You should get home and think, that was a nice hard ride, rather than, I'm completely wrecked. Hit a swoopy trail. Flow mountain bike trails feature frequent turns and undulations, jumps and drops, a constant barrage of stimuli that turns off the frontal lobe and allows you to be fully in the moment. Chase. Following someone who's just a little better than you can be a powerful trigger. Everything comes at you faster. It should be just fast enough for you to ask yourself, can I do this at that speed? Roll with your squad. Riding in a group requires intense focus. When you're in the pack, you're plucking through the novelty, says flow researcher Stephen Kotler. A group can actually enter flow state together when members share the workload, a smoothly rotating pace line. And even heart rates can synchronize, says neuroscientist Chris Burka, MS. Push hard, then dial back. Engage in a challenge just beyond your comfort zone. This causes a norepinephrine release to start, expediting the alert mental state we need for flow. Then, back off a hair. Example, follow wheels for the town line sprint for the first time, then dial it down and sit in the pack. Suddenly, you'll find yourself in the woo zone. Thanks for listening to The Science of Wheat. For those who want to read more about flow, I recommend Stephen Kotler's West of Jesus, as well as his Pulitzer Prize-nominated The Rise of Superman. The Long Way Home is produced by the Cycling Independent. Our motto is, if you ride, you're one of us. Find us on the web at cyclingindependent.com or on Facebook at The Cycling Independent. Be sure to check out our other podcasts, The Pace Line, which I co-host with John Lewis, and Revolting, which lives up to its name in some ways, but is highly entertaining, and is hosted by John and Steve Knievel of All Hail the Black Market. This is where we ask you to subscribe. We are primarily community-supported and need subscribers to keep the servers on. Maybe consider leaving a review wherever it is you found us. It makes it more likely other people will listen in. Constructive criticism is also accepted. Until next time, I'm Patrick Brady. Thanks for listening to The Long Way Home.